How is President Trump's approval rating doing? And does he care what his overall approval rating is? The White House seems to indicate their concern is how he's doing with Republicans, not with independents, non-party registered voters, or Democrats. Joining us to see where his approval stands and what it all means is Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's Monday. We'll get through it, though. much of the nation's been crazy hot. You guys got a taste of it, but this week you're not dealing with it up in New Hampshire, huh?
I hope not. We don't like the hot stuff.
We're going to hit like 97 today. You know what your high is going to be today there?
I think if we get in the high 80s, I think that's going to be where we top out.
All right, well, good. You're far enough east of the high-pressure dome that has places like Chicago and much of Michigan hitting the 90s today, but glad you don't have to deal with that. President Trump's approval rating is nowhere near the 90s, not even near the 80s. and it seems, you know, we saw that CBS poll early last week showing it down in the 40s, and now we have a Gallup poll showing his overall approval rating is in the 30s. What's going on?
A couple things. First of all, I would say be a little hesitant about any individual poll. I don't want to get into all the differences in methodologies, but his overall averages are about 45% approved, 52% disapproved. And these have been pretty stable, actually. And to your point that you made on your intro, really the things that matter is where Republicans are. And Republicans still are with Trump. When you look at this overall, and it's, some of these polls, it's about 85 to 90% of Republicans still approve, 95% of Democrats disapprove, and the independents are trending trending disapprove, about 60% disapprove among independents. So he's keeping his base. But I guess the thing you have to think about here is that the 2026 elections aren't really about Trump. The 2026 election is about those people in Congress, and they're the ones who are going to be paying attention to what's going on here more than Trump. And right now, I think the one poll number that's going to cause them some angst is the generic congressional ballot is about plus 3% for Democrats. 46% say they're going to vote for the Democratic candidate, 43% for the Republican candidate. And the House and the Senate are pretty evenly split. That means if Democrats pick up a few votes, a few seats in the House, we could see a replay of what we saw in his first term with lots of investigations if Democrats control the House.
You know, that's an interesting point you make because, yes, the White House has made it clear that their concern is how he's doing with his base, with Republican voters, and they seem happy that overall he still enjoys very strong approval from Republicans because that's who he feels he was elected to serve by and large. But we do have midterm elections, and how much weight historically does a president carry in terms of endorsements and support for candidates in midterm elections? And how could the president's sagging approval rating with those non-party registered or independent voters mm-hmm. when it comes to the midterm elections?
I think what you're going to see is Republicans in states, if they're running for Senate, if they're in states that aren't really strong Republican or strong MAGA Republican states, and Republicans who are running for re-election in congressional districts that are up in the air, toss-up districts or districts that maybe just lean Republican, you're going to see them not be big advocates of Donald Trump. I think you see him drifting away. We're already seeing that in states like up here in Maine. We do polling in Maine that Susan Collins is not seeking Trump's endorsement because it probably will hurt her. So you have to really look at it on a district-by-district basis, a state-by-state basis to see what kind of help and endorsement from Trump would give you. If you go back to the first midterm elections, in the 2018, Trump's endorsement hurt Republican candidates, and especially in the primaries where you saw more moderate or more mainstream Republicans lose to more MAGA Republicans in the primaries. Those guys lost in the general election. So that's the problem that these Republicans who are in office right now are looking at. They're saying, how close do I want to get to Trump? to keep the MAGA folks on my side? Do I want to get too far away from him to antagonize them, to try to get independence? It's going to be a little bit of a balancing act for a lot of these Republicans, but they're still in a wait and see mode. They're not going to have to really make these decisions until next summer.
Yeah, we've got some time here, and the president has an opportunity to turn things around. Historically, though, it's not uncommon for us to see the American electorate go another direction in midterms, that even if a Republican or a Democrat gets very strong support in the presidential election, it feels like most of the country likes some sort of balance in D.C. So it's not unusual to see the other party surge 2 years after a presidential election in midterm elections, is it?
Oh, not at all. In fact, if you go back over about the last 100 years, there's only been three times in which the president's party gained seats in the House of Representatives in a midterm election, and the last one being in 2002. So it's almost always that the president's party loses seats, and it's kind of like that. You know, your party, most people aren't focused on politics that much. They come out and vote in the general election for president. And then if you like Republicans say, OK, we got Trump elected, well, we can go home for 4 years. But Democrats are angry. They're looking for any way to get back in the game. So Democratic voters will come out and vote in the 2026 election like they did in the 2018 election.
Yeah.
And that pattern, I think, is likely to repeat itself in 2026.
All right. And with narrow majorities in both the Senate and the House, we'll have to wait and see if the Republicans can hold on to those majorities in the midterms. History is not on their side. We're talking with Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. Welcome your questions and comments at 504-260-1870 and the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. When we come back, I'm going to talk to Andy about the trends and what they may tell us in the polling numbers for President Trump losing support, not amongst Republicans so much, although maybe a little bit with Republicans, but mostly with those independent and non-party voters. What do the trends suggest we'll see going forward? And a big announcement about a deal with the European Union over the weekend for a trade deal on the heels of the Japanese trade deal. Could that help the president's approval numbers? We'll let Andy talk about that after we check on WWL traffic. Gallup poll has President Trump's approval rating down to 37%. CBS had it around 43% earlier last week. Talking with Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, who says, don't look at any particular poll, but look at the polls in general and how they're headed. And Andy, it seems that there has been a steady trend of the president's approval numbers going down and his disapproval going up. Should we expect that trend to continue?
Well, historically, that has been the case, and it's changed some over the last, I'd say, the last 20 years. It used to be that when a president first was elected, their approval rating was quite high in the upper 60s into the 70% range. You know, people had to have what we used to call a honeymoon. The honeymoon's not really there anymore. So Trump started out pretty low. His average when he first started off his second term here was just above 50%, and he slid on his averages down to about 45% now. I don't think it's going to go too much lower than that, because so far he's been able to keep Republicans on his side. And, you know, that's 35% or so, 40% of the electorate. Democrats were against him from the beginning, and they're not likely to come back. So I don't think it's going to change too much, because just the nature of partisanship in the country. But that pattern is pretty much true. You start off with a honeymoon, and then it's like maybe you've been married a couple times and your wife doesn't like you much after a few years.
Yeah, this is not our first marriage this case, no doubt. The things that the president is seeing higher disapproval for amongst Democrats, obviously, and non-party or independent voters seem to be surrounding those things that make Republicans happiest. So it does feel like as long as he continues this strong policy on dealing with immigration and keeps playing tough with other countries when it comes to tariffs, that makes Republicans happy, but it seems to be making others unhappy. But of course, the impact on the economy is the one thing that affects everybody. And if he can't get the economy moving back in the right direction, that could have some Republicans leave his camp, couldn't it?
Yeah, the two things that I pay attention to is economic approval. Right now, it's dropped about 12% since he started off. He's underwater about 12% underwater. On that one. The other one is on inflation. Watch where he is on inflation, because right now his average on inflation is only 39% approved, 59% disapproved. And if you remember back to the election in 2024, that was one of the major areas of focus, was the inflation during the Biden administration. These are the things that impact people every day. These are the things like trade and so forth. I don't think most people care about trade or tariffs because they don't really understand that necessarily, but they do understand when their paycheck's lower or that their paycheck doesn't buy as much as it used to. And that I think is going to be the biggest problem that we have, is that the inflation that's come in over the last several years isn't going to disappear quickly. I hate to age myself, but I remember the inflation of the 1970s. It took a long time to get that out of the system. And I can't say that that's going to take as long this time around, but I don't think we're going to be out of the woods immediately with it when it comes to inflation.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing. And that's, Republicans may love his policies and love what he's doing, but if he continues to cost them money and life gets tougher for them, it's hard to support any candidate, any president, when you're struggling personally, if you feel like it's their fault. But he did announce trade deals with the European Union over the weekend and Japan last week, and that could lead to less uncertainty, and that could have financial markets feeling better, and maybe that'll help, huh?
Well, if your 401k is looking better, and if you've got money in the stock market and it's looking better, yeah, you're going to feel better regardless what inflation is, or maybe you're factoring in that into your analysis of inflation. But I think if the Republican Party now and Trump's base, these are not wealthy voters by and large. The Republican Party has become the blue collar party in the United States, and a lot of them don't have 401ks or money in the stock market or investments like that. They're living paycheck to paycheck. And they voted for Trump because they were seeing the value of their paychecks decline. Those are the people that he has to be concerned about. And is he going to be able to have them continue to rationalize or justify why they're going to support him for other reasons other than the economy?
Andy, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Have a great week.
Thanks, Dave.
Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center. How many more candidates are going to jump into the U.S. Senate race against Bill Cassidy? We'll talk about that after the news. 6:45, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. Thanks for joining us to get your work week started here on a Monday morning. Saw a guy walking on the interstate in the 4 o'clock hour this morning in the left lane on the Carrollton overpass. At some point, he was going to have to cross over the lanes of traffic one way or the other. And I almost called 911, but then I chose not to. One person texts and says I made the right decision. Quote, let him live his life. The police only make things worse if they even show up. But somebody else texted in and said, you should have called 911. You may have saved a life. Well, we haven't heard about a fatality, thank goodness, but I understand your point, and I was kind of torn. Keep the text coming at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We saw another challenger announce he is going to jump in the race to face Bill Cassidy next year in the midterm elections for the U.S. Senate. John Cuvion is a Louisiana-based pollster, founder of JMC Analytics and Polling, and joins us on the live line. Morning, John.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Glad that you're here. How is this race shaping up for Bill Cassidy's seat, and why is he facing so much opposition as an incumbent?
Sure. So basically what's happened, we have to go back in time to January 2021, when after Bill Cassidy got comfortably reelected in 2020, seeking President Trump's support, he then turned around and voted for the conviction of President Trump. And one of the things I've seen in politics is every now and then there's that one vote that you make that you can never explain or spin away. Going back in time, for former Senator Mary Landrieu, that was her Obamacare vote in 2010. For Dr. Cassidy, it was the impeachment / conviction vote. So that has been the genesis of all his problems. I would also make the argument the other thing, which despite what pundits said has not helped him, was his ultimate vote on RFK Jr., because the thing about it was he did it and played Solomon when that's the kind of vote where, regardless of where you ultimately fell on favoring or opposing him, you should have come out early and said, this is where I stand. So a combination of those two things, as well as primary voters are more restless against their incumbents, and specifically here we're talking about Republican primary voters, because one thing that's going to be different about next year's primary is that instead of it being in November, the legislature changed the law to where now only Republicans and independents and unaffiliateds can vote in a Republican primary. So right away, the most progressive, liberal, Democratic vote of about 35%, they're out of the picture with regards to this primary that'll be in April. So it's a culmination of all those things.
You know, you pointed out that Obamacare vote may have been what ultimately did in Mary Landrieu and why she is no longer a U.S. senator. Her days were probably numbered anyway in an increasingly red state in Louisiana as a Democrat. Could this also, the vote to convict on impeachment of Trump in his first term, ultimately spell the end of Dr. Cassidy's term as a U.S. senator from Louisiana?
My attitude is anything is possible in the world of politics, but then there's the second part of the picture. So there's really two halves to this coin here. There is the fundraising part, which we'll talk about shortly, but there's also the polling part. And so I had recently conducted a poll, and full disclosure, it was at the behest of Dr. Fleming. This poll showed that, and I've been polling it every few months, this poll showed that a previous poll deficit that Dr. Fleming had, where he was behind Bill Cassidy 32% versus 34%, Dr. Fleming has now pulled into a 36% to 29% lead over Bill Cassidy. And even what I would argue is more ominous for Senator Cassidy is the fact that if you look purely at registered Republicans, which is basically the base of those who would vote in April, Dr. Fleming's lead stretches to 42-29 lead. So the biggest issue for Dr. Cassidy, or Senator Cassidy, in my opinion, is the fact that no matter how I polled him in various ballot test configurations, he was stuck in the low to upper 20s, and that's pretty bad for a two-term incumbent senator.
Indeed. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about that fundraising aspect and the challenges that Dr. Senator Cassidy faces going forward with these numbers continuing to slide and with his offending the Trump base with that single vote. We'll also look at who else is now jumping in the race and how many more candidates there may be. We're back with John Cuvion after this check on WWL Traffic. Talking with John Cuvion about the upcoming U.S. Senate race next year. Incumbent Bill Cassidy is now facing 10 challengers. And do you expect that he's going to face more as this race continues to unfold, John?
So what's interesting about that is I would expect more, but the question then becomes the quality of those challengers, because there's a couple of realities here that would impede a major entry after now, and that is with an April primary, then you're talking about January qualifying, which means any serious candidate, because this is, of course, a statewide race, but any serious candidate really needs to be jumping in right about now, because not just the time it takes to raise money, but the fact that now you're going to have these little mini primaries. And by primaries, I'm talking about every quarter you have campaign finance reports that are due, and political observers do study those fairly exhaustively as a way of telling if they think someone is healthy or not. And so, like I said, the clock to me is rapidly running out for someone serious to jump into that race.
Now, Louisiana Public Service Commissioner Eric Scrimeta jumped in last week, joining other would-be challengers that have a real shot. Louisiana Treasurer John Fleming, who you noted is paying you to do some polling, and State Senator Blake Miguez. What are those campaign finance reports telling us right now?
So what's interesting about them, and I'm going to give the kind of, the disclaimer, which probably is not permissible political discourse. If campaign finance reports are certainly a good way for assessing the health and or viability of a campaign. But where I'm going to go off course here is say the name of the game, in my opinion, is not necessarily who has more, but who has enough. But having given that disclaimer, let's give some numbers. So Senator Cassidy does lead with $10.8 million, which that's certainly enough to run for this and probably another campaign if he wanted. Then we have Dr. Fleming, who has $2.1 million in the bank. State Senator Blake Miguez broke out with $1.7 million.
Wow, that's kind of surprising to me that he's got that much.
Yes, and what's interesting about that is that's the interesting thing, redundancy here, right? When you're talking about what political observers look at, that first quarterly report that you put out after you jump in is going to be scrutinized, because if you're running for statewide office, and let's pretend you only have $20,000 in the bank, which another candidate named Sammy Wyatt has, that $20,000, that's not enough for a state house race, much less a U.S. Senate race. So when Blake Miguez makes a splash with $1.7 million, $1 million of which was a loan, that is something that catches people's attention that, okay, this guy's serious. And one of the things that Eric Scrimeta, who just jumped in, did, which in my opinion was fairly smart, was he waited until after the quarter's end to jump in. That way he's bought himself 3 months of time in terms of people going to be curious how much money he's raised. But that also means that Eric Scrimeta has to post some really good numbers come mid-October, because he's going to be measured by what Miguez raised, what Fleming raised, and by Senator Cassidy raised. So, like I said, even though I'm of the opinion that having enough to compete, and by that metric, we're talking about a Cassidy-Miguez-Fleming race, still, people do look at, okay, well, this person has $8 million more than the competitor, which, it's good for bragging rights, but I'd also remind you that back in the Landrieu-Cassidy race of 2014, Mary Landrieu similarly had $10 million, which was more than what Bill Cassidy had. And yet Bill Cassidy still beat her by 12 points.
You can't buy an election. You have to have the other factors as well. We've run out of time. Thank you, John. I know we'll be talking to you a lot about this race and others before the actual election. Hey, I got another one of those texts that looked like it was from the Louisiana Office of Motor Vehicles warning that I had to pay them some money. So we're going to have the OMV deputy commissioner on after the news. Is it a scam?